In times of war, especially before a major battle or an event, it's common for the leader to express their thoughts. Sometimes quietly to a handful of close aides, sometimes as an address to government, the troops, or even the entire nation. I'm sure many such speeches come to mind. Words like Churchill's famous "We will fight them on the beaches" speech, or maybe his address to Parliament when asked about the government's policy. You ask, what is our policy? I can say it is to wage war by sea, land and air with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us. Maybe you think of Montgomery's address to the troops in Africa, where he said, "Here we will stand and fight. There will be no further withdrawal. I have ordered that all plans and instructions dealing with further withdrawal are to be burnt and at once. We will stand and fight here. If we can't stay here alive, then let us stay here dead." Whilst these words are very stirring, and exactly what was required at the time, they come from a carnal point of view. And even though there was an acknowledgement of God working out his purpose here below, these leaders never grasped that purpose. What I'd like to do briefly is look at the words of two righteous men, men who knew and were led by God. Words given during a time of great trial and uncertainty, to see what lessons we can learn from these character traits of these two leaders. Then we'll see how these traits have great importance to us and to our offering. To start, let's turn back to Exodus 14. We all know the story very well, and it's already been mentioned today and probably will be again. But the Israelites had left Egypt with a high hand following God's miraculous intervention. And then they find themselves trapped in the valley with mountains on either side, the Red Sea before them, and a dust storm on the horizon created by the pursuing Egyptian army. Let's start reading from verse 10 again. "And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Eternal, and they said unto Moses, Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in this wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." And then Moses addresses the nation in a short but very stirring speech. And says, "And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Eternal, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. The Eternal shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." The Eternal's response was equally short and to the point. In verse 15, "And the Eternal said unto Moses, Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward." Over the years, we've heard this story many times, but every time we look at it, we can glean something different. The way Moses reacted to the situation demonstrates one of the key character traits that Moses had, and one we very much need at this end time. Above all, Moses was meek. There is a comment in chapter 9 of the correspondence course which explains this further. "Meekness is not weakness, as so many have falsely assumed. It is the opposite of arrogance, vanity and selfishness. Meekness is the attitude of a repentant, converted mind. Moses was very meek, but he decidedly was not weak. Moses was strong, both physically and spiritually." Moses was teachable, and when presented with what through human eyes looked like certain doom, he did what we should all do. He stopped and looked to God for guidance and intervention. Moses wasn't doubting God. He knew that God would intervene. because he had witnessed God's intervention before. And also, God had told him exactly what he was going to do. If you just look up a few verses, starting in verse 1. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pharaoh, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal-Sephon. And before it shall ye encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he shall follow after him. And I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Eternal. And they did so. So Moses knew that God was going to wipe out the Egyptians and save his people. What he didn't know was how God was going to do it. That information wasn't given until seemingly the last minute, right when it was needed. In verse 16, but lift up thy rod and stretch out thine hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. And I will get my honour upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Eternal when I have gotten me honour upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. We all know the rest of the story. God fought this battle for them, saving his people in a miraculous manner. Just drop down to verse 30. And thus the Eternal saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Eternal did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Eternal and believed the Eternal and his servant Moses. Sadly, that fear and belief didn't last very long. And by the time we come to the second example that I'd like to look at, which happened 40 years later, the nation had chosen to fight their own battles and had become a warring nation. We heard this morning about character traits of Caleb, but let's look now at Moses' successor, Joshua. The Israelites had just crossed over the Jordan, the manna had just stopped, and Joshua was out for a walk, quietly contemplating what lay before them, the fortress of Jericho. In Joshua 5, we read verses 13 to 15. And it came to pass, when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said unto him, art thou for us or for our adversaries? And he said, nay, but as captain of the host of the Eternal am I now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, what saith my Lord unto his servant? And the captain of the Eternal's host said unto Joshua, loosen the shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so. This took some serious courage. Notice how Joshua actually saw this imposing character with sword drawn, and he boldly walks right up to him and asks, are you for us or against us? How could Joshua have been so courageous? Again, just like with Moses, the Eternal had told him just enough in advance. Notice the first few verses of chapter 1. Joshua 1, verse 1. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Eternal, it came to pass that the Eternal spoke unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that I have given unto you, as I said unto Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea towards the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. And notice verse 5. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swore unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper wherever so thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but by thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then shalt thou make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For the Eternal thy God is with thee, whithersoever thou goest. Joshua believed the word of God and was very courageous. And the rest, as they say, is history. Whilst these events are very timely, and the lessons from them are very important to us today, what do they have to do with offerings? Well, let's start by turning to Deuteronomy 16, where we are commanded to take up an offering, and we'll read verses 16 and 17 yet again. Deuteronomy 16, verse 16, 3 times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Eternal thy God in the place where he shall choose, in the feast of unleavened bread, and in the feast of weeks, and in the feast of tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Eternal empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Eternal thy God, which he hath given thee. In many passages, God explains why things are to be done, but not here. The holy days are laid out in the first 15 verses, and then after that, these 2 verses commanding that an offering be taken up in the 3 holy day seasons. Although in the New Testament, we are shown things like he who sows sparingly shall also reap sparingly, and God loves the cheerful giver from 2 Corinthians 9, 6 and 7, we aren't really told why. As with Moses and Joshua before us, God has revealed a lot to us, but not everything. Some things we don't need to know, else he would have told us. God promises to protect us, but he doesn't tell us how. To give an offering just because God commands us to requires the meekness of Moses. But what about courage? Why would courage be required to give an offering? In the offertory on the first holy day, Mr. Monroe focused on the importance of our offering being according to the blessings that God has given us, and that it is a vital point of this commandment. But note, it is according to the blessings which he hath given us. Past tense. It takes courage to give from what we currently have when we look at the world around us in uncertain times ahead. All human instinct is to preserve what we have because times are getting hard, and we know they are going to get a lot harder yet. God will bless us, that is for certain. How God will choose to bless us in the near future, he doesn't reveal. His commandment is to give now, today, based on the blessings we have already received, while taking into account what we can realistically afford to give at this time, right now. As world events escalate around us, we read headlines about hyperinflation and the rapidly rising cost of living. It takes courage to trust God to provide for our ongoing needs, whilst being good stewards of what God gives us. This courage is being tested as events continue to ratchet up around us, and we have to rely on God to provide at an even more and more basic level. To give offerings, and even our tithes for that matter, at a time of financial hardship makes no sense to those in the world. Yet to give our offerings is to demonstrate the meekness of Moses, obeying God's commands, as well as the courage of Joshua, trusting God to keep his promises to us. While we do take up the offering, we will have some best music, which is taken from Psalm 119, Let Your Mercies Also Come Upon Me, which is sung by Mrs. Sylvia Duke.